You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
And just like that, it's the third and final hour of Miller and Moulton along the network. The Diamond District bonus hour is an hour away. And by the way, for our loyal 239 audience, we'll have a special guest for you. Okay, a coach and general manager whose playoffs start tonight. Huh? How about a clue? Yeah. Their playoffs start Saturday afternoon. First time in 4 years that the Orlando Magic are in the postseason. Jake Chapman will be calling the games because he's the radio voice of the Magic. Follow Jake on X at Jake Chapman OM. Jake Chapman OM. Jake, it's David and Mark. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Well, come on now. A little more through. Your first time in the playoffs in 4 years, man. You got to be fired up.
I am fired up. I am extremely fired up. But I need to save that juice, gentlemen, for Saturday afternoon, Saturday morning. So I'm trying to pace myself here.
Of all of the teams you could have matched up with, and I know a lot of people wanted Indiana and the Pacers because of their playoff experience, but Cleveland last year, I mean, they're kind of where Orlando is this year. They were early into the playoffs, didn't have a lot of playoff experience. This is a pretty good matchup for the Magic, isn't it?
I think so. I think for no other reason other than the Cavs are just kind of a mess right now. They have a whole lot of questions swirling, I guess, regarding the head coach, regarding Donovan Mitchell's long-term stay and contract status in Cleveland. And the way that their postseason ended last year was getting smacked around by the New York Knicks, frankly, in five games. They got out rebounded. They got out physical, which isn't a word, but that's exactly what happened. So there's a lot of pressure surrounding Cleveland right now. And I don't think the Magic are thinking of it as playing with house money. But I do think the Magic are kind of in a place like Cleveland was last year, where it's just sort of new for everybody. And so I think the Magic can, at the very least, hang with them physically. I think their size will bother Cleveland. And I think there's some questions as far as the Cavs' identity that they need to answer. And the Magic probably aren't a great team to do it against because we're such a good defensive team.
Now, if you look at the matchups, when Cleveland has beaten Orlando, they've hit like 15 threes a game, right? So that could be the series, Jake. If we're going to give Orlando even or a slight edge inside, and I think that's fair, doesn't this come down to Orlando has to negate Cleveland's advantage on the perimeter?
Yeah, I think so. I think the three-point shooting is going to be huge because that's obviously a big deficiency for us, and that's something they do very well. And it's not just the principals, Mitchell and Garland. Sam Merrill is the sharpshooter who just gives us fits, and they've got guys like Niang who can knock down shots from the perimeter. So that's where they thrive. We're a good three-point defending team because of our size. But I think it's going to come down to us defending the pick and roll with Donovan Mitchell. You can't let Mitchell get 50, and if you do, you better not let anybody else get anything. And defending the three, and then on the inversely, how do we hang with them? Because I have a feeling it's going to be a whole lot of low-scoring games, but we struggle for long stretches to score the ball. We need to turn them over, and we need to generate offense through offensive rebounding. Like, I think rebounding is going to be a huge key to this series. And for the Magic, when the Magic are playing well, their defense is helping create offense for them. So turning teams over and then forcing misses and getting out in transition and getting easy buckets that way, and then crashing the glass and getting some offensive rebounding opportunities.
Well, that's where I wanted to go, Jake, because defensively the Magic have been great this year. They turn teams, just like you said, I mean, they're one of the best teams in the league at turning teams over, and not just turning them over, but they're able to get transition and score points. They're one of the best teams at getting points off of turnovers, and to me, that's key to the series, Jake.
I think it's going to be huge. And so now you're getting into, okay, how long is Jonathan Isaac available for, right, game to game? Because when he's on the floor, especially when he's in the starting lineup, which we've only seen twice this year, but you saw it in the most important game of the season on Sunday against Milwaukee, another team with a whole bunch of size. With Isaac and Suggs on the floor together, it could be devastating defensively. And so I think those two guys are going to kind of be the heads of the snake, so to speak. And, yeah, like Mitchell is going to have the ball in his hands constantly and be running a million different pick and rolls with Jared Allen and with Evan Mobley and whoever J.B. Bickerstaff can draw up. It's going to be about keeping Mitchell in front of you. Can't put him on the free throw line. That's been a big issue. But I think defending Mitchell, defending the threes, and then if we can turn them over and disrupt the offense, then I think that'll be the type of game that we want to play.
He's Jake Chapman. He's the radio voice of the Orlando Magic. Follow Jake on X, Jake Chapman OM. Jake Chapman OM. Don't want to get, you know, crazy ahead of ourselves because things happen. But, I mean, Banchero's a second-year player, and he was a finalist for an absolutely loaded Olympic team. He's 21 years old. This is what, Shaq, McGrady, Dwight Howard? I mean, you know, there hasn't been this much excitement about a young player in, what, 15, 20 years?
Yeah, it's been a while. And, you know, if you think about when Dwight was here the first few years, it took Dwight a while, right? I mean, he came in and he was so thin, and you just knew it was going to be a project. And the team was a project. It took until, what, year five or six for the Magic to really sort of, you know, vault into contender status when Dwight was here. It's year two for Paolo, and he's got a young roster around him as well. So he has put the whole thing on his shoulders and on his back, and that's not to take away from guys like Franz and Jalen. They've been phenomenal. And Coach Mosley's been in the middle of all of it, obviously. He's probably the primary responsibility for all of this. But Paolo is a dog. He plays every night, which is amazing in today's NBA. Like, he wants to be out there even when he's nicked up. And he's just so smooth. And what I've been most impressed with this year is, you know, Franz went down for 8 games in January with an ankle injury. You've had some instability as far as starting lineup has gone. It's a long NBA season. He has been consistent, and he's gotten better as teams have loaded up on him, throwing double teams, sometimes triple teams now. He's making the right play, and that's what, you know, I knew he could score when he came out of Duke. I knew he was, you know, going to be big and be able to go through guys and able to go around other guys. I didn't realize he was going to be, you know, this good this early at being the focal point of an offense, seeing where the double's coming from, seeing the holes in the defense and manipulating that. And he's a much better passer than I anticipated. So he's been phenomenal, and it is. It's a lot to ask, because it's very early in his career, but as he goes, we go. And so he needs to have a big series. And it is, you know, between he and Franz, and the fact that our two main ball handlers are 6'10 wings, Cleveland poses kind of a tough matchup because of their size, because of Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. And they've got guys like Isaac Okoro they can throw at you, who are, you know, is pretty specifically a wing defender. So I think it's a really great matchup. I think it's going to be, you know, probably the home team wins the first couple games, and then you have maybe a break point, game five or six. But, you know, Paolo's been so good all season long, and I expect nothing more, nothing less in the postseason as well.
And when you get to the postseason, Jake, guys got to amp it up. But the way Orlando's played all year, being a team that relies heavily on defense, and they're a hard out every night, do you think the transition for this team not being in the playoffs is a little easier than it would be maybe for other teams?
I do, and I also think, and look, it's going to be, you know, there's other stuff, right, that the playoffs bring, the scrutiny, the schedule. All of a sudden you're going to look up and there's going to be 20 reporters there, and most of the season there's been four. But the physicality is what everybody talks about, and the way the game's officiated in the postseason, and just, you know, it's a slobber knocker night in and night out. And so I didn't think I'd be using that word this morning. But it's something that I think we've adjusted to over the last couple of weeks. Like, coming out of the All-Star break, there have been a handful of games, whether it was the Knicks or the Milwaukee game on Sunday, Philadelphia the night before. Some have been wins, some have been losses. Sometimes I don't think you've met that challenge. But the physicality is huge, and I do think we're a big, pretty physical team, especially for a team as young as we are. It should be a little bit less of a learning curve than it might be for other teams.
The future's really bright, isn't it? Because you guys have assets. Like, you, there's a clear need. We've touched upon it. I mean, you guys need a shooter or two. But you've got a stockpile of talent of which to trade from. And you've got what a lot of teams don't have, which is size. I mean, you know, Jake, for as good as the moves and the coaching have been in the last 2-3 years, if you have one more offseason of the right moves – then this is going to be a run, isn't it?
Sure hope so. I mean, look, you've got guys in place who ideally will be here for a long time because they're young and they're on rookie contracts. And when you have rookie contracts, you got cheap labor. And so you can go and overpay for somebody and then kind of kick the can down the road. You're going to want to make sure you keep a lot of the young core intact, right? So you got to make sure you have that money earmarked for Jalen, for Franz when they're due. Their extensions are going to be eligible, or they'll be eligible for them this summer. And so you can start working on those. You're going to have in the back of your mind what it's going to take, and you're probably going to make sure you get that done no matter what. Obviously, Paolo Banchero is not going anywhere until, you know, the end of the contract after his rookie contract. I mean, he's going to be locked down for a long time. But you've got the assets to be able to cash in your chips via future draft picks if you want to do that, if you want to hit the trade market. And I do think, look, you know, Orlando is considered a small market, but it's Florida. The weather is great. State income tax, all of those things. Is it Miami, New York, Los Angeles as far as the free agent destinations go? No. But when you have a guy like Paolo and a guy like Franz and a player's coach, so to speak, that's what they say, not me, and Coach Mosley, and a chance to win, well, now all of a sudden it's a lot more appealing, I think, to free agents. And you know, we talk about the Team USA experience. Paolo being part of that, just doing it last summer with FIBA and being part of the program, gives him exposure to the rest of the best players in the league. So the future is certainly bright, and I do think in years past, where you might not have been in play for a big free agent name, or you know, these days when a guy wants out and he goes to the GM and he says trade me, typically he comes with a list of four or five teams that he would like to be traded to. So all that stuff weighs in, and when you have a good young roster, now all of a sudden you're in the mix for all of those things.
Jake, safe travels. Have a great call, and hopefully we can catch up midway through the series.
Thanks, boy. Sounds good.
Jake Chapman, radio voice of the Orlando Magic. They head to Cleveland Saturday, 1 o'clock. Not only game one of their series, it's game one of the playoffs, of the full playoffs anyway.
I would suggest for those of you that want to watch the series, figure out where NBA TV is on your dial. Because that's the network that this series will get most of its games aired on. They start on ESPN. But games two and three already on NBA TV, game four on TNT, 5, 6, and 7 TBD. Miller and Moulton, we're always TBD. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
David Dwork, scheduled to join us. We've had trouble connecting with David this year. We call him, the calls don't go through. He calls us, they eventually go through, but not on time. All right. I've texted him and I'm like, hey, you're scheduled to join us. You haven't heard back yet, which always gets me worried. You know, did he retweet our lineup? That's usually a good sign. If the people who are scheduled to come on retweet it, it's like, okay, they're in.
Yeah, we've had none of that today.
Yeah, so hopefully David Dwork, getting ready. Lightning and Panthers, baby. Third time in 4 years. Oh, we're doing this. It begins this weekend. So there.
Poll question is up. It's a very simple one. It is about the play-in, but should the NHL adopt the play-in tournament for their postseason? Early voting and very, very sparse voting. Terrible poll question based. I mean, yesterday we had a poll question that had more votes than we've had in ages about Trevor Bauer. Today, six people care about the NHL getting a play-in tournament.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Good to know. So about Trevor Bauer. No, I'm kidding. But you're right. We had a lot of votes. And I was worried. I didn't think people would be interested in that story. What was the final vote, by the way? We just asked whether or not do we think Trevor Bauer, now that his accuser has been discredited elsewhere, do we think that a Major League Baseball team will sign Trevor Bauer at some point?
And we had a big vote, and nearly two-thirds of our audience said that no, he will not play in the majors again.
And you're a no, and I'm a
no.
A yes.
Yeah. Not that I wouldn't sign him.
No, you and I are on record. We actually would have signed him before the events of 2 days ago. I mean, if you're not charged with a crime, how can we? I mean, you know, this isn't you were charged, you went to court, you were found not guilty. Or
this isn't Angel Cabrera.
Right. Cabrera went to court, was found guilty, served 2 years in prison for beating up his wife. And, you know, I think we can draw certain conclusions. But, you know, if you're accused of something, but you are investigated twice and never charged, that's, I don't know. We're not happy about the allegations at all. We're not minimizing it, but Miller and Moulton are in the category of, you didn't even get charged? What, and we can't sign you? So, all right, we'll see what happens. He's a starting pitcher. And, boy, teams are just loaded with quality starting pitching, Mark.
And none of them are getting injured, David. I mean, that's the good thing is that they're all healthy. Everybody's pitching.
Deep in the game,
right.
Too. Right. Everybody's going 7-8 innings to start.
Who was it? The Padres pitcher last night goes 7 2/3. I think King gives up 2 hits. They pull him. They lose 1-0.
Right. Yeah, he took the loss, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But don't let him get out of that with all the runs he's given up so far.
Right. Mets have played like 21 games this year. They've had 3 starters pitch 6 innings. 3. I think yesterday was their 4th. 4th time they had a start in 21 games go 6. Right.
Okay, I'm going to be that guy for a second. Does the pitch clock, do you think that affects what's going on?
No, I don't.
I don't either. I'm just.
I think it's all velocity and spin. I think it's the sweeper. I think it's they're trying to get more spin because that creates more velocity. They're throwing harder than ever before. I don't think the 2 to 5 extra seconds of rest would prevent them from being injured.
I don't either. I'm with David. This is all about how hard they're trying to throw the ball every pitch. I mean, you used to work up and throw the heater past someone. You might work them with a couple of off-speed. Now the sliders are 90 miles an hour.
First pitch, you know. And, okay, we're 3 for 3 in that department. I just wanted your guys' opinion because that's what some of the experts are saying. They think that the pitch clock is speeding things up and it's adding to the fatigue and therefore expediting potential injury.
Yeah. Well, listen, Tyler Glasnow gave another interview. I'll say this. If I'm Major League Baseball, I got to give Tyler Glasnow a show. Tyler Glasnow likes to talk, and he talks, and he legitimately answers questions. He's admitted when he's done things that he wasn't supposed to do, and he had just flat out said, hey, man, we've figured it out financially. If you give us a choice to pitch a certain way and to pitch 8 years in a row without being injured, or we go max out all the time, high strikeout rate, but we're going to blow out our arm sometime in the first 4 or 5 years of pitching that way, we're going to max out and blow out our arm. Because you only get paid nowadays if you strike people out.
And how many times do you actually get paid? Twice? Tops? If you know what I mean, you got your initial contract, and then you've got one more time for certain. And we've shown that after a guy gets Tommy John, they're not afraid to pay him a second time.
And I think, David, you brought this up last week, and I think this is a great point, is franchises kind of plan for a guy to have Tommy John. And they would almost assume, if you're going to have it, they would almost rather you have it early in the first 5 years.
Yeah, no, organizations now figure that every pitcher is going to have one Tommy John. You know, when is it that they have it? Did they have it in college? Did they have it in the minors? Did they have it early in their major league career? You know, Verlander, hey, he eventually had to have it. Turns out he had it 20 years into his baseball career. He had it in his late 30s. But eventually even Verlander broke down.
And the other side of it, too, is that, you know, you brought up, would Maddux even get a shot in today's game? by size, I don't even know if he'd get signed. These guys are huge.
They are. And that's a great point, that by size, because people forget early Maddox through 95. He did. His first, take a look, when he was with the Cubs, Maddox's fastball was 95. You know, the Maddox who was with the Braves kind of lived in the 91 to 93 range. But nowadays, 95, they kind of go, eh.
And they would know based on how big he is that they're not going to see an increase in velocity. Where if someone's throwing 95 and they're 6'4", they think they can figure out a way to get a couple more miles per hour out of him.
He had a 76-pitch complete game.
Yes, he did.
76 pitches. To review, it's 27 outs. Do the math.
We have 76 pitch innings now, it seems, David.
It sure does. Especially top and bottom if you add it together. And we made the point a week or so ago that I don't know if Tom Glavine gets signed. Now, yeah, and early Glavine got into the low 90s, 91, 92 tops with his fastball. I know he's left-handed and that changes things, but you know, Smoltz would have been fine. John Smoltz, you know, he threw hard enough, the big pitches, you know, tall enough, big slider. Smoltz would be fine today.
Glavine might have had to play hockey. He was drafted in both.
Right? What, LA Kings?
Yes. Came out and skated with the Atlanta Knights when I worked there. Oh, when I was working in the eye, he came out and did a practice with the Knights one day. Just came out and did a pregame skate.
Oh, that must have been cool.
It was.
After all, it's Tom Flickin' Glavine.
At that time, the Braves were kind of a big deal.
Right. As was he. Wow.
Somehow got him off the golf course to come play some hockey one morning.
Boy, that's true. Boy, you interrupt the Smoltz, Maddox, Glavine golf game. You guys were a BFD.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
22 minutes before the hour is up. Our last segment along the network, Diamond District Bonus Hour. We'll be talking more hockey. Head coach, general manager of the Florida Everblades. Their run for a three-peat begins tonight. Brad Ralph will join us. But right now, David Dwork joins us. He covers the Florida Panthers, trying to get back to the finals. Channel 10 in Miami, writes for the Hockey News, has a Panthers podcast, Chirping the Cats. Busy guy, busy time of year. Follow him on X at David Dwork, D-W-O-R-K. David, it's David and Mark. Thanks for joining us. The Lightning, baby. Let's do this.
Let's go. It's a lot easier on the travel schedule, that's for sure. But no, this is going to be fun. Like, I think the Panthers are pumped talking to them after Tuesday's game against Toronto, listening to them kind of go on about finally knowing who they were playing. Like, it seems like they're pretty pumped for the Tampa rematch. You know, there's like Paul Maurice, Matthew Tkachuk, they've never played Tampa in the playoffs before. And Sam Bennett said, look, we're a much different team, completely different styles, everything we do. So they're pretty excited. And I think the fans are pretty pumped for it too.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, in a lot of ways, the Lightning changed who the Panthers are. They become a grittier team. They become a team more built for the playoffs because of not completely, but because of playoff, the lack of success against the Lightning in the postseason. This team, though, they're going to bring the physicality to the series, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point that you made, that the whole reason that they hired Paul Maurice, the whole reason that they changed up the style that the Panthers play, was because they got shoved in that 2022 series against Tampa in the second round where they got swept. And that was the year Florida won the President's Trophy. They had Andrew Brunette behind the bench. He was a Coach of the Year candidate for the Jack Adams that year, and they completely shifted everything. And to your other point, 100%, the Panthers are going to bring the physicality because that's what they've done all season. That's the way they've played. They've been playing playoff hockey since game one, and I think they're really anxious to get going. I'm curious what it looks like in game one, because it's one of those things where, I mean, I'm sure the Lightning, it's the same thing because they've, similar to Florida was last year, where they've been just kind of pumping as hard as they can since Christmas to make up for a slow start. You know, both teams are pretty pent up, ready to go for game one. So I just want to see how it's going to explode. Hopefully it starts out with a big bang in game one. But I don't know. I just keep thinking about how pumped I am, and kind of unfortunate that we have the Sunday afternoon start instead of a Saturday night prime time. But, you know, it is what it is, right?
You know, David, I think in a way it's good, if not great, that this is who Florida drew. It's kind of like I grew up a Rangers fan. And if the Rangers were ever going to skate with Lord Stanley, you figured somehow, some way they'd have to go through the Islanders. And sure enough, first round that year, the best Rangers team of my lifetime, who'd they draw in the first round? They drew the Islanders, who'd gone to the conference finals the year before. And it was like, you know what? If we're going to do this, let's go right out of the chute. You figure if the Panthers are ever going to do this, they got to exercise the Tampa Bay Demons, don't they?
Yeah, 100%. And hopefully it's a similar series for the Panthers, and they just kind of march through the way that the Rangers marched through the Islanders that year in 94, if I remember correctly. But it's really kind of fun when you have that rivalry. Like, I mean, these teams went, what, like 20-plus years without ever seeing each other in the playoffs, and now we're getting three times in four seasons. The rivalry during the season has definitely picked up over the last few years. Like, these teams really don't like each other. There's no secret about it. They don't try to dance around it. And now we're finally getting, like, this rivalry that's really picked up over the last 2 years. So, yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great for the teams. It's great for the fans. And yes, to your point, I think for the Panthers to get past, to get, you know, to exercise their demons, as you put it, yeah, I think it's appropriate that they have to get through Tampa in order to get there.
This team kind of goes as Tkachuk goes, and he's had a great year, and he loves the play. It seems that he rises in the postseason. So is he the guy that has to lift them past Tampa?
I don't know if it's necessarily one guy, just because Florida, the way that they've played this season, it's so much is predicated on how they play as a five-man unit on the ice. I think, you know, with Tkachuk, his line with Sam Bennett, now that Carter Verhaeghe is healthy again, that's just a line that can hit you in so many different ways because they've got speed, they've got skill, and then, you know, as you know, with Tkachuk and Bennett, these are two guys that have zero issues hitting you in the face, and they're both guys that are known as prime playoff performers. So while I think that line is going to play a big role, especially 5-on-5 with Tampa, because Florida, for their benefit, stay 5-on-5 as much as they possibly can in this series will be a smart move. But yeah, I think that line will be crucial, not just Tkachuk, but just because the line can do so much, play in so many different situations. They can line up against the better forwards, or they can do whatever they need to do against the defensive line. It's going to be a key. But again, just the way that this team runs, they don't lean heavily on one or two guys, and I think that's why they were able to survive the injuries and the illnesses that they did during the regular season, because they can kind of hit you in so many different ways, and they're such a deep forward group that they don't have to rely on one guy.
Who do you think, what line do you think Paul Maurice is going to go to against Point and Kucherov? You think it's Barkov's line?
Yeah, I would think so, just because that's been their best defensive line probably all season. Between Barkov and Sam Reinhardt, who really does not get talked about enough in terms of the way his defensive and his two-way hockey is. Sam Reinhardt, he's probably going to get votes on the Selke Trophy this year because of how well he's played defensively. So that's it. While it is their best offensive line, obviously, because you've got a 55 or 57 goal scorer in Reinhardt, you've got Barkov, who is another point-per-game season. And don't forget Vladimir Tarasenko is a trade deadline addition. He was almost a point-per-game during his time with the Panthers so far. So it's an interesting thing that Paul Maurice has with this line, just because they go both ways. But I would think that's probably who you're going to see lined up against Point, at least to start the series, and then you see how it goes.
How's the health of the Panthers going into this series, David?
Probably as good as it's been in a while. It wasn't just the health. They had a couple of bugs that traveled through the team during the second half of the season that kind of hampered not necessarily the energy level, but just kept guys not quite where they needed to be. But right now, they're as healthy as they've been. Aaron Ekblad, Carter Verhaeghe, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Sasha Barkov, guys that have been a little banged up over the second half that have been held out here or there. Everybody's expected to be green light, good to go for game one. And it's great just because the Panthers are a team that's kind of traditionally over the last couple of years always seem to have a guy in and out of the lineup. So this will be nice. Hopefully Tampa's at the same level, and these teams can hit each other hard as close to full strength as possible.
Do you think there's any hesitancy if, for whatever reason, that Paul Maurice would have to go to the backup, Anthony Stolarz? Do you think there'd be any hesitancy there? I mean, Bob obviously was amazing last year in the playoffs. He's had playoff runs before. He's the guy. But every now and then, especially the Panthers against the Lightning, the goaltending has not held up in the past. Do you think he would hesitate to go to Stolarz?
I mean, obviously everything's case by case. I think if they felt that Bob wasn't performing, they would have no qualms whatsoever in terms of confidence in Anthony Stolarz. He has been lights out all year. Paul Maurice said the other day that it's been one of the few times in his coaching career that he can think of where he didn't have to consider situations when it came to playing the two goaltenders. Like, there's a lot of times where you have a backup goalie and you have to think, okay, which teams do we want to play him against? What buildings, what situations? Like, you really have to map it out. And he said this year it was just a matter of mapping out what they thought was best for their goaltender's conditioning and how they thought the two guys would perform schedule-based. Had nothing to do with personality or, you know, personal goaltending. Stolarz was lights out. I think if you look at his stats for goalies that started 25-plus, he led the league in goals against and save percentage. He was just an unbelievable goaltender this year. And one of the things that Paul Maurice pointed out when we were talking about Stolarz last week was that early in the season, they felt like Stolarz was really trying to overexert himself and really just kind of do as much as he possibly could. And once they reined him in a little bit and really told him to work with his size and just let the systems play into his advantage, he just took off. So, no, I think if Bob struggles at all, I think if there's any, you know, if he's given up 4 or 5 goals the first couple of games and he just doesn't look like he has it, they won't hesitate whatsoever to go to Stolarz because there's just as much confidence in Stoli as there is with Bob.
You know, David, you mentioned something earlier, and you said that Florida wants to play 5-on-5 as much as possible, and I think that's a point that needs to be emphasized because Hedman's going to play 25 minutes a night, and if they're playing 5-on-5, it gives them a better chance to bang him and bang their defense. Where do you see Florida have an advantage on Tampa? I think it's down low and take advantage of their defensemen. Where do you think it is?
No, I agree. I think it's in the dirty areas of the ice just because I think that's where Florida has thrived. Regardless of the line, the player, whether it's a forward or a defenseman, they play such a supportive system that, you know, it doesn't really matter necessarily the position of the player. It's just where they are on the ice and where they need to be, where everyone else is. So I think those are the areas where the battles along the boards, getting below the goal line, getting down on Tampa's defense, grinding them down in the forecheck. I think that's the best thing the Panthers can do because it's going to keep Tampa's forwards moving a little bit further down, maybe trying to support a little bit better, which is going to take them off of their routes and take them off of what they want to do, especially particularly in their zone exits. So 100%, you hit the nail on the head that I think the physical game is going to be a big key to if Florida's going to succeed against Tampa.
It's the best Panthers team entering the playoffs ever, isn't it? Which, you know, listen, the Bruins were a historic team entering the playoffs last year, and we saw what the Panthers did to them. But on paper, health, the whole deal. David, this is the best Panthers team heading into the playoffs, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think it's a combination of how good they are on paper, and they play a style that is built for the playoffs. So this is like, you know, the $10 million man or whatever it used to be back in the day. This is a team that was built for one specific purpose, and that's for playoff success. So that's why it's going to hurt 10 times as more, I think, if they don't find that success over the next couple of months. But, yeah, between the roster that they have, I mean, they're incredibly deep. They've added to it at the trade deadline. They're improved from the issues last year. They're deep. They've basically got 5 forward lines and 4 defensive pairings heading into the playoffs. And then, you know, as we've talked about, just the way that they play the game right now, they're going to grind you down. They have zero issues doing the physical things, doing the uncomfortable things that a lot of guys shy away from. And, yeah, this is playoff-wise, they are built. This is probably the best chance heading into the playoffs that they've had. And that's interesting coming off a year where they just went to the Stanley Cup final and the year before where they won a President's Trophy, but they're learning, they're evolving. And I think when you talk about that, you just have to give credit to the guy who just got a contract extension, and that's Bill Zito.
So does the GM of Channel 10, does he give you the company credit card for the 2 months on the road that you're planning on here? Are you in charge?
I'm going to give you his number. You can shoot it. See about that.
Safe travels. Hope it's a long run. Hope that we can talk to you many times along the way. David, enjoy it. Thanks.
Oh, my pleasure, fellas. Be good. We'll talk soon.
David Dwork, Channel 10 in Miami, covers the Panthers, writing for the Hockey News, talking about them. Chirping the Cats is the podcast. Very simple to follow on X, David Dwork, D-W-O-R-K.
You know, you brought up the line matchups. I think it's about the defensive matchups against the Kucherov and point line. How well Montour and Ekblad play against the top line of Tampa.
I will say I don't know if there's a line out there. Even, you know, the Rangers' number two line has been phenomenal this year. I'm trying to think of the other teams in the playoffs, even the Austin Matthews line in Toronto. But, man, that Barkov line, first off, he's huge. Secondly, he can skate with anybody. And his winger's got 57 goals. That's the best defensive line on the team. And, oh, by the way, the leading scorer is on the wing. I mean, it should make the point Kucherov line really have to work. Instead of them doing all the dictating every time they're on the ice for their 20-something shifts, that the Barkov line should be able to say, you got to deal with us also.
I hope this goes seven. I don't think it's going to. I think the Panthers are going to get it done a little more quickly than that.
Oh, look at you. Look at you.
They're the better team. Top to bottom, they're the better team.
They are. I mean, it's a great coaching matchup. Okay.
Right.
You know, Cooper's a Hall of Famer. Paul Maurice is an excellent coach. Cooper's a Hall of Famer. All right. Bob is an excellent goalie. Vasilevsky's a Hall of Famer.
So if I asked you guys right now, just for your pick, for the, you'd say Panthers, but how many games?
Six.
David?
See, are the Panthers better? Yes. Are the Panthers deeper? Yes. For the Lightning, though, getting the Panthers now is the best case scenario for the Lightning. They're healthy. They'll be rested. They're primed. They're starting on the road, where if they win one, they get back in the Panthers' head.
Do they capitalize, David?
He wants to take the Lightning so badly.
I know he does. I can tell.
You can see it.
How do you pick against the Lightning in the last 10 years in the Eastern Conference? Haven't they gone to like six of the last nine conference finals, four cups?
I'm not saying you're wrong. This is just it's a fascinating matchup.
It's tough to pick against Vasilevsky, okay? It just is.
I agree.
There we go.
So you're taking the Lightning.
No, I'm going Panthers in seven.
Oh, would be something. Cannot wait. They get started Sunday, 12:30. Lightning and Panthers, game one as the Stanley Cup playoffs get started. Along the network, thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow in the 239, the bonus hour, talking a little Everblades next.